This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. China's Prime Minister Wen Jiabao visits the United States next week amid one of the deepest and warmest thaws in Sino-American relations. Since the crisis following a collision between a Chinese fighter and an American reconnaissance plane at the start of the Bush administration in April 2001, Washington and Beijing have found a great deal to agree upon, including some trade issues, the war on terrorism, and the effort to bring North Korea into negotiations. While China remains a developing nation, its version of capitalism has generated unprecedented prosperity, and a new generation of leaders is working toward a diplomatic makeover. Once regarded as difficult and threatening by many of its neighbors, China is seen by many these days as cooperative and friendly. Later in the program, making the roads safer for the little guy and his little car, and the story behind the success of Frownies, a kind of Botox or the budget conscious. But first, the growing influence and power of China and what that may mean for the United States and the world. If you've traveled to China, give us a call and tell us if you've noticed any changes. Call also if you have questions about politics, culture, or the Chinese economy. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us, TOTN, at npr.org. In a few minutes, we'll speak with specialists on China's vast market, on its relations with Taiwan, and on the talks with North Korea. First, though, we begin with China's rising political influence with Min Chin Pei. He's a China expert and senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace here in Washington, D.C. He's joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Happy to be here.
Can we start with this new generation of leaders, in particular the man who will be visiting Washington next week, Wen Jiabao?
Oh, yes. Prime Minister Wen Jiabao is one of the new generation of leaders in China. He became the Prime Minister in March this year, and as soon as he became the Prime Minister, he encountered one of the most difficult crises China faced in recent years. That was the outbreak of the SARS epidemic. And in that crisis, he proved that he was a very capable, decisive administrator. And most recently, he also became the first, on Monday, he became the first senior Chinese leader to have shaken the hands of an AIDS patient. So in other words, he has projected a very refreshing image. He's shown to be a hands-on, pragmatic leader.
And what about the new president, Hu Jintao?
Well, President Hu Jintao shares some similarities with Premier Wen Jiabao. First of all, like Premier Wen Jiabao, President Hu began his political career not on the coastal not on the coast in China, but mm-hmm. in a very poor area, and also they are of the same age, about 60, 61, President Hu is also more low-key, less ostentatious than his predecessor.
You talk about their age. These are striplings, kids, from our vantage of Chinese politics. What is it that has brought such people to power so young, certainly for China?
I think several factors. In the early 1980s, the leaders who led China at that time put in a system called mandatory retirement. If you will, it's term limits Chinese style. And since then, as a result of the implementation of that system, people who are over 60 or 65 are forced to retire. So President Hu Jintao and Premier Wen Jiabao were able to rise through that system relatively quickly.
Earlier today, we spoke with James Sasser, a former American ambassador to China, and he was describing the recent changes there as an era of cordiality. And according to him, China had the biggest GDP, gross domestic product, in the world until the 1830s. Afterwards, they had difficulties with feudalism and certainly with colonialism as well. He says, in the mind of many Chinese, they're now returning to their rightful place in the world. Would you agree?
I think certainly some Chinese will think that way, would feel that way, but I'm not so sure that feeling is shared by the majority of the people. Because even today, after 2.5 decades of very rapid economic growth, China remains a developing country. On a per capita GDP basis, China is very poor, about $1,000 per person. So they have a long way to go.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Clint, who joins us on the phone from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're on the air, Clint.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. It's the first time I've actually reached you, and I'm a little bit nervous about talking, but I just want to make one comment, and I didn't know how much of the profits on the goods that Americans buy that are built in China stay in China, and whether or not they're brought back to the States, the profits that is, if the company is located in America. But it just seems like everything I pick up, from my child's toys to hardware I use to a tool, is all built in China. And I just wanted to comment on the Chinese deficit of trade with America, or America's deficit with trade with China, and it seems like it couldn't be anything but happy times in China based on that. And I'll take the comments that you have for that off the air.
Well, Clint, thanks very much for the call. Don't be shy next time.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, it's a very complicated story here, because many, when, say, a fax machine gets sold in Walmart, it has gone through a long process, and a lot of parties are involved here. To make the long story short, China gets probably only a small percentage of the profit. But China's contribution is really in terms of its cheap labor. So if you open up that machine, the Sony fax machine, for example, or Panasonic fax machine, you'll find that parts are made in Japan, in Korea, in Taiwan, and then it's sold to Walmart, probably coming here on a Hong Kong-owned freighter. So Walmart makes quite a bit of money as well. So I'm not so sure there's an exact breakdown of how much money China makes out of that process. But my estimate, it's relatively small. Walmart makes quite a bit. And, of course, the parts makers in Japan, Taiwan, South Korea make quite a bit. But there's another twist to this, because China has this $120 billion trade surplus with the U.S.,